news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast,
are the Ordinary Pickball Broadcast.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, the ladybugs came to the ladybugs picnic.
Here comes your host, Kyle Abaron of the World Series.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 74. We give you all the geeky news that you can use, and we are also now part of thegeekmedia.com. Make sure that you open a browser while you're sitting at your computer and check out all the cool geeky content on there. And my name is Kyle Abaron. I'm an LA-based voice actor. You can hear me on the new Dragon Ball Z Broly double feature on Blu-ray disc. Woo! And Castlevania Dracula X Chronicles for PSP.
And this is your co-host, Otherworld Steve, and I'm a dad, so that means that's about all I'm doing now.
That's like cooler than everything else, actually.
Well, not really. The band's cooler than that.
Okay, the band is cooler than that. Tell them about your band.
I got a band. It's called Perimeter of the Void, and we have my MySpace page. You can go to myspace.com/perimeterofthevoid and check out, not necessarily our latest, but definitely our greatest, but we will have some new stuff up very soon.
That's right, including in this very episode. We'll tack a new song on the end of this episode.
Yeah.
And there are some sneak previews on previous episodes, but it's probably easier just to go to your MySpace page and check out the songs there, because that's basically what we've posted, right?
Two quick things. The song at the end of this podcast is really cool, because it actually has a really cool cameo from a really cool dude in it, and we'll get into that more a little later on. But, we're almost wrapped with the disc with our debut album, so we'll be announcing the release pretty soon.
That's right. As a big FU to the music industry, we got to find out a cool way to distribute this stuff online, I suppose, right?
Well, it's not really an FU to the music industry. It's because of the music industry's FU to the music-consuming audience.
There you go.
So, we are doing this entirely independently. I say independently, but I've actually had my own independent record label for quite some time now. For about 10 years, I've owned my own independent record label. And through it, I did a lot of music promotion for a lot of other acts. So this is actually the first big release from my label.
Fantastic.
And I'm a ASCAP member now, too. So
what, an ass hat? What?
An ass hat. ASCAP.
Oh, yeah. That's one of them fancy schmancy musician royalty thingamajiggers.
It is. I'll tell you what it stands for. It's the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers.
They're awesome. Now, there's another one called BMI, but they charge.
Well, ASCAP charges too. It's just that BMI charges a lot more. And BMI also makes you sign a 3-year exclusivity contract, meaning that once you sign up with them, you're stuck with them for those 3 years. You can't go and join another recording artist rights group or anything else. And I didn't want to get involved in anything like that.
Fun. You know, not to turn this into the ADD podcast, but I'm holding in my hand a pack of Stride gum. And you've seen these commercials where they talk about the flavor lasts for frickin' ever. It's true. The flavor lasts for frickin' ever.
Really?
And it's good.
I will take your clinical analysis to heart here.
I know you're more of a coffee person. I don't know if you chew gum at all.
Got one in my hand right now. I'm a coffee and cigarette kind of guy.
Right. Well, I like coffee. I don't smoke, but occasionally I enjoy a piece of bubble gum. And I have to say, they must have struck a deal with Satan, because the flavor lasts an unnatural amount of time on this Stride gum. Just thought I'd say that.
Well, that's amazing for an American product, because it seems kind of like, you know, counterproductive.
There you go. But I suppose we get back on topic. We actually do have content for you folks, including news on the Ghostbusters. Yeah, they're coming back. Not in a way you'd think, though. PS3, Sony is enjoying the wonderful sales figures due to their recent price cuts. Got more scoop on that. The big movie news, of course. Anyone who's into Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z will know that the live-action movie is coming to fruition. We've got the scoopage. Also, director Michael Bay, who is responsible for bringing Transformers to the big screen, is intentionally throwing off fans. We'll tell you more about that. Hasbro is commenting on G.I. Joe, the big live-action adaptation. Marvel is bringing a huge comic book archive online for a price. And if you're an artist, Red 5 Comics is actually looking for you. So if you're an aspiring comic book artist, listen close. We'll give you details on a possible in to the industry. Oh, and very important, we can't forget that we have to give a big shout out to our first sponsor here on the Big Ball Broadcast, fastfoodanime.com. John, who runs that at many, many, many conventions in the dealer's room, has finally started an online website. We're going to take a little break in the action, folks. We'll be right back with more Big Bald Broadcast.
Come on, say it.
Hey, man, that gecko won't talk like the one on TV.
Yeah, but with radio, no one can see it dance.
And that little dance won't help you save 15% on your car insurance.
Aha, but it could save me 25% on my anime.
What are you babbling about, man?
Fastfoodanime.com can save you 25% on your anime. From DVDs and manga to soundtracks, plushies to Japanese snacks, I buy everything from fastfoodanime.com.
Nice. You know geckos can't dance, right?
Fastfoodanime.com.
So, it's been a while since we've had a show. So, I've spent the past month and a half going to conventions back-to-back weekends, and I am friggin' exhausted. But I've had a great time. I've gone everywhere from Canada to Philadelphia to Houston, and I don't even know which way is up anymore. But I want to thank all the staff and all the fans. I had a wonderful time. I'm just jet-lagged. But I racked up some serious frequent flyer miles, so I'm very happy about that. Enough miles, in fact, to pay for my flight home for Christmas to Dallas. So I got a free trip home. That's awesome.
Yay. Yay for miles.
Yay.
It's been a roller coaster ride. It truly has. I know you announced on the listener feedback episode, which was posted on Monday, October 1st, that, yeah, Becca and I are parents now. This is my first podcast since that wonderful day. I was going to say since this fateful day. I was just wrong.
Fateful.
Actually, as we're recording, it's been 8 weeks today. 8 weeks, 1 hour, and 25 minutes.
Yay! That's awesome. Yeah, if you've been keeping up with the blogs or the MySpace or LiveJournal, we did do a big shout-out of congratulations. And I did post some pics, too, on KyleAbear.com.
You did. I should probably update some of those. He's got daddy's head of hair, that's for sure. He's got a big old bushy head of hair.
Yeah.
Again, his name is Jonathan Nicholas. Cutest thing. Cutest. I know people say, you know, they always say their kids are cute. But really, I think he's a cute kid.
You made a cute kid. You done good.
I done good. Becca did really well, so my hat off to her more than anybody else.
You just had to make a funny face for a few seconds. She's the one who actually, you know, had to, like, cook him for 9 months and then squeeze him out.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. That was something. Let me tell you, that was something.
But that's cool. Well, what did I tell you? You know, from one parent to another, doesn't it change you for the better?
It changes you. My life isn't what it used to be, I'll tell you that.
You're having to give up a lot of things, aren't you?
Oh, virtually everything, you know. I really want to play some Halo 3 on the Xbox, and it's just really hard to find the time. Not that my work schedule helps any. But yeah, I mean, everything with the band and my book, you know, still working on the book, but that the progress has really slowed down on that.
Well, what you need to do is just go ahead and train your son. Just hand him the controller and get him started early.
Oh, no. We got to start with the music first.
Oh, okay.
I think he's going to be a drummer.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm a drummer. I love this.
We need more drummers. Drummers are hard to come by. Everybody wants to be a guitarist, you know, and these damn rock star games and Guitar Hero, they don't help the cause any.
Not really. You know, Guitar Hero, shmah. Nah. We need more, like, drum mania. We need that.
Well, you know, probably with the drum stuff, you could probably actually learn some fundamentals from that. This Guitar Hero crap, it is not going to teach you how to play real guitar, that's for sure.
No, but I tell you what Guitar Hero did, it exposed me to the extreme talent. I know you're going to roll your eyes, but I love Dragon Force. I love the song that's on that game. It's really fast. It sounds like 80s retro speed harmonic metal stuff, and I'm in heaven hearing that kind of stuff.
That's all I've seen over your blogs and stuff.
I know. Dragon Force. Put on a cheesy music video on my MySpace. Dragon Force. Like, oh my gosh. It's Spinal Tap all over again.
Are they better than Perimeter of the Void?
Well, no. No one's better than Perimeter of the Void until you put a music video out.
Soon enough.
All in good time.
All in good time. Again, that's one of the things I just need time for, so. Yeah, I got in a pretty nasty car accident, which certainly didn't help with anything going on here on my end.
Yeah, that kind of brings things to a screeching halt, pardon the pun.
Yeah. Actually, the irony involved in that is there was no screeching. It was just a sudden halt.
As your windshield came to know, yeah.
Yeah, you saw the pictures. Maybe for giggles, I'll put a picture or two up on the podcast page.
Especially of the windshield, dude. That is amazing. That's like artwork.
It is. It's really a sight to behold. I look at those pictures and I can't believe it. Just to kind of to backtrack a little bit and fill the listeners in, I was heading to work late at night. And without going into too much detail, let's just say I got a little distracted. And I rear-ended a parked car.
Oh, so you're... Now, were you wearing a seatbelt?
No, and I really want to... That's the only reason I wanted to discuss this on the podcast, as embarrassing as it is. I really want to put it out there that, you know, for a long time I haven't worn my seatbelt, and things got a little messy as a result. I impacted the windshield, and it wasn't just making contact with it. I mean, I pushed the thing out a good 3 inches, and yeah, I don't remember the crash. I don't remember the crash at all. Like I said, I was a little preoccupied, and the next thing I know, I was staring at my shattered windshield and didn't even know I was bleeding all over the place. And I guess I hit my chest pretty hard against the steering wheel because the airbag didn't deploy. Jeez.
Yay, technology.
But I'm all right. It's been about a month already, surprisingly. Holy crap. I do have whiplash, and that's about the only thing I'm still suffering from. I do have a shard of glass still stuck between my eyes that hasn't come out yet. And I might have some minor scarring on my forehead, but to walk away from something like that is amazing. And again, once I put the pictures up and you see what my head did to the windshield, it's hard to imagine somebody just kind of walked away from that. But yeah, lesson to be learned. Kids, wear your seatbelt. You may not think it's the coolest thing to do, but seatbelts save lives, and they do save your face from smashing up against the windshield.
Now, I, on the other hand, have gone through an entire life of childhood through adulthood wearing seatbelts because it was ingrained in my brain. My dad and my mom always would say that. First thing I get in the car, put on your seatbelt, put on your seatbelt. I find myself doing that with my daughter, too. Put on your seatbelt. And it's just, I just do it. I mean, even in strangers' cars, if I'm a passenger, even if I'm in the back seat sometimes, I'll just, by instinct, grab the seatbelt.
And you know, the most ironic thing about it is I was warned, literally. I got pulled over about a week before the accident for not wearing my seatbelt. And I got fined for it because here in Massachusetts, it is against the law to drive without your seatbelt. And I did have to pay a fine for it. And you thought I would have learned. And this was right before Becca had the baby, actually. I got pulled over and I said, you know, I'm going to be a dad. I got to be responsible. I got to start wearing my seatbelt. And just not thinking. But I do now. You know, everything went through the insurance and I get another vehicle. And ever since the test drive with this new vehicle, is the seatbelt goes on before I do anything. So.
And I got to say, your new wheels kick ass.
I think so. You know, some people crack on me because, you know, they think it's an old timer's car. I did get a PT Cruiser limited edition. And, yeah, I do see a lot of older people driving them, but, you know, I'm not a kid anymore, so I kind of fit into that.
I test drove one, and I fell in love with it. The problem is, being 6'3 and of a larger build, it didn't like me too much, so, yeah.
Yeah, digging the new wheels, certainly.
Fantastic. Well, the best news of all is, you know, you're still here with us, so...
No broken bones, no brain damage, no new brain damage, but...
no further brain damage.
No further brain damage. No life-altering impact. Again, no pun intended.
Yeah, really. Yeah, because Jonathan needs his daddy around.
For a few more years, anyway.
Well, our inbox is actually still receiving email, even though we haven't done a show in a while. And, of course, our apologies for that. But we're back, for better or worse. We don't know how often we're back, but we're back whenever we can podcast, damn it. And you can send your email feedbacks, comments, questions, suggestions, even stories. We'll credit you, don't worry, to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. We're going to start off with a letter from Hero004, who writes, "Dear Gurus of Geek, first off, congratulations to Steve on the new baby. I'm excited for you on your new adventure as a father. I've been a listener for a long time, and you guys were the first podcast I experienced. Out of all the podcasts I listen to now, this remains my favorite. Instead of simply saying, boy, isn't Star Wars cool? Let's talk about our favorite lightsaber color. You guys provide further insight about something from an intelligent person's perspective rather than spluttering simple fan talk that I can hear every day. Anytime I hear about something, it is a priority to hear about it from Kyle Hebert and Otherworld Steve's perspectives. As a huge movie buff, the Big Ball Broadcast is like sitting in on a film school class that is extra entertaining since you guys are into the same types of films as I am. Getting in on information about my favorite movies that I wouldn't otherwise via the BBB is very valuable to me, especially since that is the profession I would like to pursue. The commentary on Revenge of the Sith was extremely entertaining. You guys have also gotten me into other film franchises that I probably wouldn't have checked out otherwise, namely Serenity. As an anime fan, I find great validation listening to the Big Bald Broadcast. Steve, you talking about how great the English versions are really make me feel good to be a dubby. And Kyle, you're one of my favorite voice actors, if not my favorite, and you provide a lot of insight on the field and your experience. Gohan is my favorite Dragon Ball character and one of my favorite characters in fiction, thanks in large part to Stephanie Nadolny and your work on voicing the longly developed Half Saiyan. The Big Ball Broadcast also makes me crack up at least once per episode. The combination of you two's sense of humor is a lot of fun. So, thanks you guys for the intelligent and amusing opinions and info on the well-known and obscure flavors of geekdom around the world. I will always be a loyal listener and supporter. That's an awesome letter, isn't it?
You know, I was going to say, hands down, best feedback response ever in the history of this podcast. In 74 episodes, best. Hands down.
Thank you very much, Hero 004.
Yeah, and just, you know, really brought back a lot of memories. We did, in fact, do a commentary to the entire Star Wars Episode 3 film. So you can go back in the archives and find it. We put it up as a podcast, and we tell you when to queue it up with the film, and you can actually listen to our thoughts throughout the entire film.
Yeah, and now, of course, other people are kind of banking in on that concept of just doing podcasts. Like Mike Nelson from Mystery Science Theater has a whole website. He charges like $3 or $4 per episode of, it's like, all right, listen to my commentary for Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. And, you know, you just pop in the movie if you have it and just listen to it, hit play. And I love that concept.
Well, ours is free.
ours is free, by the way, and free is a good price. So moving right along, we've got Keen checking in once again from Canada. Greetings from the Great White North. I hope autumn is coming along nicely. The rabid fans of the internets are waiting rather impatiently for your next show and are definitely looking forward with nervous eyes and bated breath. Bring it soon or suffer with the knowledge that you leave us yearning for more. You guys do a great show, and I listen every time you release an episode. Make sure not to stop the stream coming, and a deep congratulations to Steve on the little angel he'll be unleashing into the world. Oh, and how come you go to Alberta but not Toronto? We have a nice set of conventions here in May and August. Hint, hint. I'll be honest here, Keen. The whole thing about the conventions is they have to do the inviting. I can't invite myself. So the con called Animathon in Alberta invited me. I went to Toronto a few years back with Josh Martin, who voices one of the incarnations of Majin Buu. That was, again, a few years ago, and that was kind of facilitated through Funimation and Beckett, Dragon Ball Z collector at the time. No conventions in Toronto have called me back, but if they ever send the invite, I certainly would go back. I love it. I was just in Ottawa, Canada for AC Cubed. I went there kind of as a replacement guest for Steve Bloom, who recently broke his foot, but he's getting better. And I'm very thankful to him for kind of hooking me up with those guys. Had a wonderful time. So, yeah, and I tried something in Canada called a beaver tail. So I know it sounds kind of weird, but it's kind of a pastry sort of thing that they fresh bake right there, and they smear chocolate on it or hazelnut or maple butter, you know, something really good for your arteries. And it's quite delicious, and they don't serve it in the States, and I would love to go back to Canada. If for any reason, just get me another beaver tail.
Sounds so dirty.
It does sound really, really extremely dirty. This is not the Hustler podcast. This is not Beaver Hunt.
We're kid-friendly here.
Sort of. You're like, big kids, overgrown kid-friendly. You ever been to Canada, dude?
Oh, God. Once, when I was just a youngin', we went to the Canadian side of the falls.
Ah, see, I've never been to Niagara Falls either.
Eh, you know, it's water. You can go over to your sink and turn the faucet on. It's pretty much the same experience.
Moving right along, K2 the Ninja writes, "Hey Kyle and Steve, first of all, congrats to Otherworld Steve. Your kid's got one cool daddy. I'm a recent fan of the Big Ball Broadcast and a Squinty Fried Squid." I should explain that Squinty Fried Squid is the name of my fan group online, squintyfriedsquids.com. It's also got a message board there. So any of you folks who listen to the Big Ball Broadcast who may remember my old message board, the House of Bean Dip, that's kind of what it's evolved into. So new message board over at squintyfriedsquids.com. Anyway, back to K2 the Ninja's email here. He says, "I'm a pretty big fan of Kyle Hebert. Recently picked up Naruto Uncut Seasons 3 and 4, so I'm hyped. Much Kylage. I recently heard that Michael Bay, director of Transformers, is going to direct a remake of Friday the 13th. Can imagine Otherworld Steve shaking his head in disgust. He says he'll focus the remake mostly on Jason rather than his crazy mom. I share a lot of the news I hear on the broadcast with a lot of my coworkers, so that gives me plenty of reasons to stay tuned in. I really like the episodes with interviews with other voice actors. As a huge fanboy of Kate Higgins, we know her as Sakura on Naruto, and would love to hear her on your broadcast as a singer. She and Steve could work on a tune or two for Perimeter of the Void. Okay, well, maybe Kate's voice might not be suited for the music type, though. Keep up the good work, and I'll keep listening. Kapow! Let me chime in on, first of all, that Friday the 13th remake. Some recent news just dropped. The director is actually going to be Marcus Nispel, who did the remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I guess Michael Bay will be producing, I suppose, but... we've got Marcus Nispel actually behind the camera for the remake, which is coming out on February 13th, 2009. And Michael Bay is currently focused on Transformers 2, although the writer's strike that's currently going on could delay things on both formats. And we've got a little more on Michael Bay and the whole Transformers 2 thing coming up later in this very podcast. Glad you like the voice actor interview stuff. We kind of posted as filler between episodes, but... If we can get more, we certainly will. The thing that people have to understand is a lot of these folks are very, very, very busy, and they just don't honestly have the time. If I could grab Kate Higgins for an interview, I would, and would gladly do that. So keep that in mind. We want to do more interviews, but these folks are just busy working, and we can't fault them for that.
Yeah, and as for the band, I would certainly encourage any voice actor who's interested, who would want to contribute something, certainly get in touch with me. We're all about that. Perimeter of the Void is a collaboration, we'll say. We have so much going on with the music that we've got something for everybody. And I'd love to have Kate involved in something. I'd love to have Steve Bloom involved in something. I'd love to have Johnny Young Bosch involved in something. So yeah, it's something we're totally into, something we're totally open to. And something I teased at the beginning of the podcast was the new song you're going to hear at the end of the show called Cold Steel. It actually has a narration cameo by Kyle.
Yay! I had fun with it, and it's one of my favorite tunes you put out so far.
And, you know, certainly no ego intended whatsoever, but the feedback we've gotten so far is that it is the strongest song we've posted to date.
Yeah, and for folks who are just tuning in or new to the podcast, Perimeter of the Void's music style, it's really hard to define, and Steve has a shit-eating grin, of course, because any musician doesn't want to be locked into a label, right? The last thing you want to be called is, oh, it's another Tool or another Marilyn Manson or whatever. You want to be your own thing and bring something unique. I can truly say that Perimeter of the Void is totally original, totally unique, and almost just defies definition.
I'm hoping that's a good thing.
It is. It's a wonderful thing. It's got metal influences in there. It's got the hard guitar, and it's got some screaming and stuff and everything, but it's so much more than that.
Oh, yeah, it really bounces around. You know, I've said it before. You hear piano pieces. There's some synth, some electronica, a lot of acoustic guitar. It's definitely... You can't judge the band by listening to one song. It's really all-encompassing. And there's a lot of material that we haven't released on MySpace or on the podcast that's going to be exclusive to the CD. And I really hope you guys check it out. You know, please... I don't even want to go here, but I feel compelled to. Please don't, like, torrent and download it or rip the MP3s off the podcast, because time is money. And we put a lot of time into this to really give you guys the best product available. And we also want you to hear it in the best quality available, because MP3, it's really compressed. So we hope that when the disc comes out that you pick one up. I guarantee you it's going to be affordable. It's not going to be retail priced. I'll tell you that right now. It's going to be cheap. And there's a lot of music packed onto this disc, and, you know, definitely give it a listen. I think you'll like it.
There you go. And that concludes the email section of that. And once again, let's plug the email address if you would like to send something. That is thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. Let's talk about movie news. The big movie scoop that people are asking me about, of course, instantly is like, hey, did you know they're doing a Dragon Ball Z movie? It's like, well, I don't think it's Dragon Ball Z per se. It's definitely Dragon Ball. Fox first got the rights in 2003, and it kind of sat in production hell for a long time. Steve, tell us what the scoop is on this latest development here.
I keep thinking about all the controversy that I stirred up unintentionally back in the day when the movie was announced, and the news spread around really quick when I tapped some sources on the inside and said, no, this isn't moving forward in production. So imagine my surprise when I saw that 20th Century Fox is, in fact, going full force with this flick. We actually got some casting news here. 20th Century Fox has confirmed that Justin, I hope it's Chatwin, from The Invincible and War of the Worlds, he is actually cast to play Goku, and James Marsters from Smallville, Angel, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer will be cast as Piccolo in Dragon Ball Z. Now, again, this is according to Variety, and they are calling it Dragon Ball Z. Whatever title it comes out under remains to be seen. No pre-production poster art or anything.
Okay.
According to Variety, in this big screen adaptation, Goku is a powerful warrior who protects the Earth from an endless stream of rogues bent on dominating the universe and controlling the mystical objects from which the film takes its name. Actor, writer, director Stephen Chow from Kung Fu Hustle is producing. Final Destination helmer James Wong will direct from a script he wrote, and Ben Ramsey wrote the earlier draft. Mexican newspaper El Norte reports that 20th Century Fox will be filming 85% of the Dragon Ball Z movie in Durango, Mexico, under the direction of James Wong. The production, expected to film in 2008, plans to use a bunch of places over in Durango. They say Durango meets the needs in hotels, personnel, and services like transportation, equipment, stunts, and restaurants. The movie will provide the city with roughly 750 jobs and an important flow of money. The sets will be constructed this month, and shooting will begin in January and last through March. As excited as I am, I still think this is going to be a craptacular fiasco.
Yeah, I think it's a train wreck in the making. People have talked about, you know, their casting wishes and all that, and they've thrown out names. We've had endless rumors through the years. We're like, oh, Stone Cold Steve Austin will be Nappa. Oh, yeah, Jackie Chan will be Goku, and all, you know. We've gone all over the place, but nothing official creeped out ever, except maybe once in a while saying, we hired this Ramsey guy to write a draft of the screenplay. That's the only official thing we heard in the past few years. And then this pops out, you know, it's like, oh, it's going to start shooting in Montreal in November. It's like, what? Really? They're really making this?
And I feel compelled to clarify so that we don't get tons and tons and tons of listener feedback for the next episode. Funimation has absolutely nothing to do with this project.
Nothing at all. So flooding their message boards or calling them won't do any good. This is a Fox property, 20th Century Fox, totally in charge here, totally pumping it up. And before anyone asks, none of the voice cast, as far as I know, has been contacted to be involved in any shape or form or capacity with this movie. Of course, we're all depressed about that. I think the movie will be great as long as they call a certain narrator in, but other than that, it'll suck.
Yeah, and according to everything I've read online, I don't think Akira Toriyama is attached to this at all in a consulting capacity or anything.
And we all know what happens when a Toriyama property suddenly has no Toriyama attached.
Yeah, GT, anyone?
Yeah. I do have a little info. People are going, okay, when's it coming out? I was reading that August 15th is the day to mark your calendar to watch this unfold on the big screen.
Kung Fu Hustle was certainly a parody film. It made fun of a lot of the wire fu genre. But it's really entertaining, and some of the effects are pretty impressive for what it was. And, you know, I'm looking over the list of people involved here, and it can be interesting. The other thing, too, is that 8711, or 8711, not sure how exactly to say that, that's the stunt performance company behind The Matrix, Bourne Supremacy, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and 300. They're doing all the wire fu, so that's really interesting because, I mean, The Matrix really showed a lot of, you know, pioneering action in the States anyway. This is stuff that they've been doing in Asia for a long time, but to bring wire fu here, really modernize, was really cool. So, you know, I like I keep saying, I know it's going to be a crappy film, but I don't know. I think somewhere deep in the recesses of my brain, I think it might have some pretty cool elements to it.
Well, exactly. And the first example that I can think of, honestly, is Transformers. Because people can talk about, oh, it's a crappy movie, but everyone has to admit across the board that the effects are amazing. Even if you hate the film, you got to say, no, the effects look pretty friggin' awesome. And we've talked about this on past episodes, how the end of Matrix Revolutions with the big fight was very Dragon Ball Z, extremely. It's like, wow, so this is kind of what a DBZ fight would look like on the big screen. It's like, okay, well, at least maybe effects-wise, it will look cool.
Right. I think I share the same concern as everybody else, and that's that it's going to be a revisioning. You know, you have so much history behind this franchise, and then you're looking at a 2 to 3 hour window for a film. And for a lot of people, you're introducing this property to them for the first time. So I have this feeling a lot of it's going to be dumbed down. You're not going to see this big, expansive cast of characters you may expect from the DBZ universe. It's one of those things you got to kind of go into almost like the Spider-Man franchise and say it's not going to be accurate to the comic books. It's going to be a retelling and there's going to be loose connections. So I don't know.
You kind of almost have to just take it at for what it is. It's a movie.
It's kind of like a fan flick.
Yeah.
Compared to like a fanfic, you know, it's like a loose retelling almost.
That's right. And I didn't see The Invisible. I remember seeing War of the Worlds. I don't know what Justin Chatwin looks like. I don't even know if he's right for the part. James Marsters, he did a great job as Spike in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Does he look like Piccolo? I think he could handle it. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people would argue that the first major misstep is not even casting Asian people in these roles.
Right, I agree. You know, a long time ago, when they announced that they were going to do a live-action version of Akira, the nail in the coffin immediately from day one was the director's comments about westernizing it. And although with Dragon Ball Z, they're not coming out and saying it, by their casting, that's what they're certainly doing. They're really westernizing it. And I don't know how much Eastern influence is going to be in the film or how westernized exactly it's going to be. It's a wait and see thing. We know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to do in the box office. I don't know if this is going to be impacted by the writer's strike either. I know that they're trying to get it in under the wire, but now that the strike's in full effect, who knows? We may not see this next year or in early 2009.
Well, if they're saying James Wong already wrote the script, and if they started filming this month, then I would say the screenplay was done before the strike took place. So they're probably locked in.
True, true. Yeah.
But all the big blockbusters lined up for next year or the year after, such as Transformers 2 and, you know, whatever else. It's just that's the big thing up in the air, so... So speaking of the whole Transformers thing, Michael Bay, as we had mentioned in the email, is not attached to the Friday the 13th remake, but has decided to go ahead and focus on Transformers 2. Earlier, he had said some disparaging comments about HD DVD when Paramount decided to back that exclusively. And then is, I'm not going to do it. And then the next day he retracted it all of a sudden. And now he's backing HD DVD. So now he's back on the project. But now some more kinks are being thrown at Transformers fans.
Well, as movie fans, you and I both know that one thing that happens all too common when a blockbuster is on the horizon is tons and tons and tons of information gets leaked online, be it screenplays or photos or actual film footage. You know, we're seeing that right now with the new Batman movie, where you can just do a search online and you can find a ton of script treatments, actual set filming, all kind of stuff. And Bay says, basically, he's learned his lesson with the first Transformers and that is not going to happen again. And here is exactly what Michael Bay had to say to Rotten Tomatoes. One thing I do know is that I know how to screw them up. We're going to leak a lot of false information all over the place. I now know their game. They're going to get a lot of script treatments that they think are going to be the real script. They will never see the script. We've got script treatments written that we're going to leak. No one's going to know. And he says, scoopers who currently think they're sitting on a hot one, here's a heads up. There's already a fake one out there now. There are going to be many others.
Now, I wonder how many fake ones are there because, again, this writer's strike is in place.
Well, yeah, I wonder, do you actually have to really hire writers to write fake scripts?
I don't think so.
Does that go against the guild if you're just writing a fake script to leak on the internet? I mean, there's no money being exchanged there, as far as we know. I don't know if the director or producer actually has to pay them for their time to do that.
Yeah, writing a spec script or something that you hope is going to be adapted, that's a whole different ballgame, I'm pretty sure.
But, you know, it's just really interesting reading his comments about how he's really covering his ass, because if the real script ever got leaked, he's already got this huge disclaimer saying we're going to intentionally leak tons of scripts and there's already one out there that's fake. So, you know, the real one could be posted online, but after this disclaimer, you're going to go, well, Bay said they're leaking a lot of fake. So
him coming forward now and saying that, I mean, I'm thankful that he's done that because I don't want the whole thing spoiled. I want to go in and see something new and not already know, like, all right, it's going to end this way, and this happens, and whatever.
Well, you know, you and I went through this prior to Star Wars Episode 3. You wanted to go in spoiler-free. I was just a spoiler whore. Like, as soon as the first bits of information were getting leaked, I was like, oh my god, I'd love to tell you, but I know you don't want to know. So, I think, you know, everybody holds their destiny in their own hands. If you want to know what's going on with a film, then Google it. If you don't want to know, then fight that temptation.
Yeah, now I go to one of my favorite movie sites, is ain'titcool.com, Ain't It Cool News. And they're always, for the past year, you'd always see tons of Transformers stuff. You know, the first artist designs, there was all that flack about, oh, I can't believe they painted flames on Optimus Prime. It looks gay.
You know? In defense of Ain't It Cool, they do say that, you know, if an article contains spoilers, they let you know in the headline. So
they are good about that. And continuing on about another Hasbro property, G.I. Joe.
Another has-been property. I mean, Hasbro property.
Oh, yes. Nice pun there.
Yeah. This also confirmed 110% G.I. Joe the movie. After Hasbro announced that the G.I. Joe movie is coming out as a live-action flick, there was a lot of rumor and speculation all throughout cyberspace. So Hasbro released a press release to clarify exactly what's going to go on in this movie. And although lengthy, I'm going to read it all verbatim for our listeners. I know that's what everybody wanted, me rambling for 10 minutes. Okay, from the press release, Hasbro's G.I.G. team wanted to take this opportunity to clarify some facts regarding the G.I. Joe live-action movie that we're developing with Paramount Pictures. First and foremost, we're not changing what the G.I. Joe brand is about. The name G.I. Joe will always be synonymous with bravery and heroism. The G.I. Joe brand has enjoyed a successful 43-year history spanning two generations. The first was the line of 12-inch realistic military figures that were popular with kids in the 1960s and 1970s. The second generation was created in 1982 and is based on a cast of fictional heroes and villains that make up the G.I. Joe vs. Cobra fantasy. The premise of this fantasy is a story of the G.I. Joe team led by Duke in their fight for freedom wherever there's trouble against the evil Cobra Commander and his Cobra Force. The storyline was an instant hit with kids and in the early 1980s, spawning a highly popular 3¾-inch action figure line, comic book collection, and animated series. Now here's the meat of the press release. The movie will be a modern telling of the G.I. Joe vs. Cobra storyline and its compelling characters that Hasbro created 25 years ago. The G.I. Joe team will not be based in Brussels. Instead, they will be based out of the Pit, as they were throughout the 1980s comic book series. And in keeping with G.I. Joe vs. Cobra, the movie will feature characters and locations from around the world. Duke, the lead character and head of the G.I. Joe team, will embody the values of bravery and heroism that the first generation of G.I. Joe figures established. G.I. Joe is a very important property to Hasbro, and we thank all our fans for their enthusiasm. Without you all, the brand would not be where it is today. And the G.I. Joe live-action film is expected to hit theaters in 2009.
Unless the writer's strike delays it further.
But it's...
I was never into G.I. Joe. When I walk down the toy aisles, I never see a kid grabbing a G.I. Joe action figure. It's always something else. I don't know. I mean, how big is the G.I. Joe fan base nowadays?
In the 80s, I was a G.I. Joe kid. I very fondly recall collecting the comic books right from the very first issue, and I had many G.I. Joe action figures that were later fatalities of my firework collection. Last year, the year before, they launched G.I. Joe Sigma 6 and didn't seem to go over too well. The series as well as the action figure line kind of fizzled out pretty quick. I don't want to get too opinionated here. At first, I was concerned about a movie coming out about an American all-star squad fighting terrorism, given our current political situation, and it really seemed like a propaganda hit piece to me. If it involves Cobra, and if it's done, I don't want to say satirically, but, you know, G.I. Joe's kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's kind of corny, kind of campy. If the movie comes across like that, fine. I just really hope it doesn't instill some confusing political agendas.
I just think after we've seen so many different action movies that have, you know, been a pastiche of all these different things we've all seen and all grown up on, can a G.I. Joe movie really bring anything new to the table?
But, you know, this is, I'm going to go into broken record mode here. This is something I'm frankly quite sick of discussing regarding Hollywood, you know, and the recycling. We've also got, you know, Thundercats coming out pretty soon, and too many of these old properties being revisited. They're just trying to cash in on our nostalgia, things that, you know, we really enjoyed and held near and dear as kids. And, I'm frankly sick of it, you know. The Friday the 13th remake, garbage. You know, the Halloween remake by Rob Zombie, garbage. You know, you're talking about bringing up G.I. Joe and Transformers and Thundercats. Give me a break. What's next? Strawberry Shortcake and the Care Bears? You know, Snorks, the live-action movie?
It could happen.
It could happen. And that's what's damn scary about it. And, you know, as you said earlier regarding the writer's strike, all these horrible script treatments that were submitted to the studios that have been piled up and gathering dust, you know, we just might see some of those now, and I don't even want to imagine the kind of crap they've got in the vault.
They yeah, they've had so many different scripts that don't get made, and I think this whole strike will cause them to be made. Now, one would argue that, yeah, crap ends up getting made regardless, but think about how bad the ones that weren't made are, you know?
I really want something new. I really want something engaging. I hate to say it, but, you know, the death of the Star Wars franchise with the culmination of Episode 3, that marked a high point and a low point for Hollywood, because at least that was relatively original material, you know? You can debate and argue how original it was from Lucas's standpoint, because a lot of people contributed to that film and made it what it was outside of him. But, you know, I'm looking at what's coming up. Beowulf. Come on. Do we really have to go through the archives of history to find movie material now?
Apparently. But I'm going to go see it. I think it looks great.
And, yeah, that's my other huge debate that I go on in every single podcast is, you know, do special effects sell a film, you know? I haven't seen it, admittedly, but I've read a lot of reviews and, you know, the one point that comes across from a lot of reviewers is you're taking a short story and you're trying to stretch it out to feature length film time, and I don't know. I don't know if they really hit it on the story, but people are going to go and they're going to say, oh my god, did you see how awesome that CG is? It's very reminiscent of 300. Everybody leaves the film going, wow, the effects were spectacular. I go, yeah, but where was the story?
Well, I know the story is at least ingrained in history, in literature, and it's one of the classics. So it's...
Yeah, and then right away, the History Channel had to put out a two-hour rebuttal to say, this is what happened historically.
Exactly, like when 300 came out, and people think, what? This isn't how it went down?
Right, exactly. So yeah, you know, the writer's strike came at a really bad time, because it's just, you know, showing you that Hollywood's going to keep churning out recycled crap, and I don't know. My mantra's been, the only way they're going to stop doing it is if you stop supporting them doing it.
That's right. And we were discussing before we hit record tonight about how the strike affects more than just the consumers, the viewers watching TV. Yeah, we're going to get more reality TV. We're going to get a lot more crap movies made. It puts a stop to a lot of things. The networks lose money. But more than that, it's the little people that are also affected. People behind the scenes that are deeply, deeply affected due to this strike.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, my comment to you was that while I do support what the writers are going after, because I do believe that if you contribute to such a big degree, I mean, you're the freaking writer, you know, that you should get residuals for every single format that property is being delivered on. If it's a digital download, if it's a permanent digital download, of course they should get the royalties for that. But because of the strike, yes, exactly, there are a lot of aspects of the industry that get hit. Just to name a few off the top of my head, you know, you've got caterers, which, Kyle, you know firsthand from being involved with Pirates of the Caribbean 3, that, you know, they do have some pretty big lavish spreads out on the sets.
Yes, they do. I mean, it's huge. I didn't expect to see such a spread.
You've got cameramen that are out of work. You've got valet parkers that are out of work. You know, I was reading recently that one of the industries that's most hard impacted from this writer strike is the limousine service, because it's their job to chauffeur the actors to and fro from different set locations in the studios, and if nothing's going on, then they're out of work. You have a lot of shop owners in the vicinity of the studios that see their businesses drop off because the activity isn't there anymore. It's really impacting a lot of people, and my complaint with the strike is that the guild members have an opportunity to at least collect some money while they're on strike, because that's why they pay into the union and they do get a stipend. But these people who are outside of the guild, who are outside of all these unions, these mom and pop shops, they don't get anything while the strike goes on. So while I do stand behind them in principle, I do want this strike to end relatively quickly, because they're going to put a lot of hardworking people on the smaller end of the spectrum out of business.
Absolutely. I really do hope that they come to some sort of agreement soon, because if the writer's strike spills over into SAG, and if I'm involved in any SAG project, that then I'm out of work. And people keep asking, is anime affected by the writer's strike? Thankfully, no, because the writers for anime adaptations do not fall into the same jurisdiction at all. It's definitely a separate thing. Thank God, because I hate this whole notion that you're going to strike for your cause, and even though I believe in what they're striking about, it's like, well, how do you pay your bills until then? You know, when you're not working, you're not earning money. So I understand why they do it. I just hate the fact that they are doing it, because It's not a good thing.
And there has been a lot of speculation online that pending the results of the writer's strike, that, yeah, this could spill over to SAG, and that SAG could be the next big union to pull a strike. And if that happens, unfortunately, yes, that is going to impact a lesser degree of the anime industry. Now, you have places like Funimation and ADV who are non-union, but where you are, Kyle, out in Los Angeles, there are some studios that are SAG, so you might see some of those properties halt production.
Yeah, and a lot of video games, some of them fall under SAG jurisdiction too, but thankfully, again, it has nothing to do with the writer's strike right now. If it does spill over into a full-on SAG strike, then that starts getting really dicey.
And then you see a lot more reality TV.
Disgustipating. Arrgh.
And for those who don't remember that far back, reality TV was basically born of the last writer's strike. And again, you know, I don't know why people watch that crap.
I don't really know. And yeah, when you hear the list of things that are in, you know, in the pipeline that are going to be debuting the next few months, it just hurts. I'm almost afraid to even turn on the TV.
And you know, as a result of the strike, a lot of people are doing just that. They're actually boycotting television. And I don't know if that's really having an impact on the advertisers or whatever. But yeah, you know, to surmise, I think that we all can pretty much say, again, we do support the strike in principle, but we do pray that it comes to an end relatively soon.
Well, due to some technical difficulties, Otherworld Steve's computer totally crapped out and we weren't able to continue, and he was unable to save his part of our Skype conversation, which we do the recording of the show. We wanted to get the news to you, even though Steve's not here for a little bit, so listen close. Let's move on to the realm of video games. Sony is enjoying some nice sales figures due to the recent price cuts. You've got the 40-gig PS3 available for $399. Okay, it's a little more reasonable, finally. There's a price cut for the 80-gig model as well. We're talking an increase in sales of 250 to up to 300% from the average weekly sales before the price drop. So the Blu-ray-enabled game console is finally starting to penetrate some more households here. Now, according to one company, according to Sony, a total of more than 100,000 PS3s were sold in the week ending November 11th, representing a huge jump compared to the 30 to 40,000 weekly units sold prior to mid-October. The PS3 is by far the best-selling high-def playback device on the market, with 2.3 million units sold since its launch a year ago. However, those sales numbers pale in comparison to lower-priced consoles from Microsoft and Nintendo. Sony's chief marketing officer, Andrew House, told the AP, "It puts us vastly ahead of where the other format is going to be in terms of an installed base in people's homes by the end of this holiday season." So, I don't know if $400 is too expensive for anyone to grab a PS3, but the prices are coming down. And the format war is nowhere near over. Still to this day, I don't own any actual game titles. The one I'm salivating over and is apparently not coming to the 360 is Unreal Tournament 3. Evan Wilson, an analyst with Pacific Crest Securities, says that Nintendo has completed the design for a new DS model. How does he know? Quote, contacts, unquote. According to Wilson's Secret Oracle, the new hardware will ditch the Game Boy Advance slot for an even thinner profile and add some storage media and enlarged screens. Wilson says this new model won't be released until sales drop worldwide. Rumor is that ditching the GBA slot is due to implementation of a game downloading service. If the GBA games were downloadable, the lack of a GBA slot and storage would make a lot of sense together. So the pieces of the puzzle seem to be coming together, but the whole waiting till sales drop worldwide, that's going to be a long wait. Because DS has consistently outsold the PSP in Japan and America. PSP Slim came out. It's a very nice upgrade, but not the huge upgrade that fans were hoping for, and certainly not enough to topple Nintendo's dominance in the handheld market. Now, I've always thought the PSP's screen size is easily preferable to the DS, but obviously that starts to compromise the overall physical size of the unit. PSP Slim's new interaction capabilities with the PS3, those are obviously an inspiration for the DS to make this kind of upgrade, to make it a little more interactive with the Wii. So will we see a new DS model? I think it's a ways off, but, you know, why not? I wasn't expecting the DS Lite, and that happened fairly quickly. We've got actually some news on Ghostbusters 3. You say, wait, that's a movie, right? No, not exactly. It's going to be coming out as a game next year. Slated for 2008 release on the DS, PC, PS2, PS3, Xbox 360, and the Wii. The game from the developers Vivendi have confirmed the game will feature both multiplayer and co-op. And, of course, the most important part, all four original Ghostbusters, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Bill Murray, and Harold Ramis, will be giving voice and likeness rights for the game, including some supporting cast members as well. You know, the secretary, Annie Potts, Brian Doyle Murray, and William Atherton. And we've got the story from Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. They're going to be setting it in the early 90s after the sequel Ghostbusters 2 during a new ghoul invasion of New York City. There's some pretty awesome footage of gameplay footage of the development of this Ghostbusters 3 game. My only argument is that it's about, you know, 10 plus years too late. I mean, shouldn't we have had a Ghostbusters game way back when people really cared about the Ghostbusters? Back when the first movie came out and right before the second one came out, because, you know, the second one really wasn't all that. A couple of laughs here and there, but really paled in comparison to the original, of course. Man, I'm surprised some games didn't come out earlier. You know, you got those craptastic cartoon spinoffs, but, you know, you've got the whole retro thing going on. Maybe that's the logic Dan Aykroyd's coming from. It's like, let's cash in on the whole Transformers is big. Transformers was first big when Ghostbusters came out, you know, 83, 84. Let's cash in on that. So we got a couple of quick comic book notes before we wrap up this episode here. Marvel is making their comic archive downloadable. They've actually launched a new subscription service called Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited. It will contain over 2,500 issues of Marvel comics from many different franchises and post new material 6 months after the material's original publication date. They will be available for viewing only, not for download, in either single-page, double-page, or auto-page flip format. Some of the comics will be recolorized and digitized for better viewing online. A selection of 250 issues have been made available free to entice visitors to come to the site and check it out. When I first read about this on Toon Zone, I thought, okay, cool, they're going to start putting out their comics online and on the newsstand. So that gives, you know, you could pay like, what, a couple of dollars to download it or view it online as opposed to going and buying the physical copy. Now that's where fans can have a choice. It's like, do you really want to just still embrace the hobby, go and buy your bagging board and the comic bag and seal it and buy two copies of everything? Or do you want to just read the story and enjoy it for what it is and just be able to sit at home? And, oh, it's New Comics Day. Marvel.com has posted, you know, my new issue of Spider-Man. I don't have to go to the comic store anymore. I don't see this really working out for them. And hopefully the other companies are kind of keeping an eye on how this does, which I don't think it will succeed. But if DC or Dark Horse want to kind of lead the charge and embrace the digital age, hopefully someone who works for them is listening to this podcast. One last thing. If the writer's strike could actually do something positive, it'd be opening a door for some comic book people. And we know there are a lot of artists out there in the world. A lot of them actually listen to this podcast. And we just want to put it out there. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Red 5 Comics is looking for new freelance pencilers, inkers, colorists, and letterers. And if you're just rolling your eyes going, no, I don't want to work for them. I never even heard of them. I want to work for Marvel, DC, or Dark Horse. Like, no, 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 you can't think like that, all right? You got to remember, in any profession, you need as many notches on your resume as you can get, because this gig probably could get you to DC or Marvel or Dark Horse. If you're really wanting to break in, this is a legitimate company, and they are making a legitimate call to artists for penciling, inking, coloring, and lettering. Check out the link in the show notes for the official submission form. These guys are wanting to see at least 5 pages of your best sequential storytelling art, not just sketches, not pinups. These pages should demonstrate an ability to handle a variety of scenes, technology, backgrounds, and characters, ranging from quiet dialogue to intense action, and they want to see your work online. And a lot of artists use DeviantArt, PhotoBucket, or Flickr, or their very own websites. So keep that in mind. If you do want to break in, Red 5 Comics may just be hiring you. So check out the link in our show notes for red5comics.com, and you just may have paved your way into the comic book industry. Well, thank you guys for putting up for the long hiatus between episodes. We're going to try and crank one out as often as we can. We know it's going to get kind of dicey here during the holiday season. I've got some more traveling coming up. Got to go see my family in Dallas. And, of course, you are the new dad, Steve. We'll certainly fight the good fight and get a new show with geeky news up as often as we can. And we do thank you for your patronage and downloading the episodes. Feel free. You've got a whole archive of past stuff to listen to in case you're really bored. Of course, a special thanks again to FastFoodAnime.com, our official sponsor for the next several episodes. And the Big Ball Broadcast, also part of TheGeekMedia.com. Check that website out for lots of cool geeky content. We're going to end this podcast with a new song from Steve's band, Perimeter of the Void. This is their new song, and it's got a little narration in the middle featuring yours truly. The song is called Cold Steel. Until next time, see ya!
sun that I bleed myself dry. Only closing in and ready to engage me. Missiles guided within erratic impotence. And I hope to forget this.